just a book. It can't hurt you.
Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
All right, so this week we are going to hit The Imitation Game, The Babadook, Babadook.
Babadook!
I say The Babadook because I'm American.
But it doesn't, it's a whole thing, but it doesn't work that way. Anyway,
yeah. All right, the last one up after that is going to be Horrible Bosses too. But let's go back to The Imitation Game, and Christy's going to start with that one.
Yeah, so The Imitation Game is in the Oscar game because it is a biopic about Alan Turing. Yeah. Aha! It's a biopic about Alan Turing, who was a code breaker in World War II for the British, and his life is pretty incredible because he was not only crazy smart, but also socially awkward, and ultimately he was gay, which was super illegal in England at the time, and all of these things factor into a story that is not just about war and not just about a very unusual man who did very incredible things, but also about how society is sometimes really screwed up. So there's a lot going on, but the things you need to know is that Benedict Cumberbatch plays Alan Turing, and he goes to the military office and is basically like, I like puzzles. You want me to figure out how to crack the Enigma code, which is the code that the Nazis were using to send each other wartime messages? He's like, I'll do that. And they're like, you're kind of an asshole, but all right. And that's effectively the premise. Keira Knightley is the lady that helps him, and then there's some other dudes in there, like the guy that I hate from Downton Abbey, and I forget his name now. He plays the chauffeur, and I hate him. And
Alan
I blame
Leach.
Him yeah, Alan I blame Leach. Him. I blame him for things that happened in a season, but I don't want to say in case you guys don't watch. You don't watch Downton Abbey, anyway. Also, Matthew Good. So yeah, The Imitation Game. It's getting a lot of comparisons to The Theory of Everything. And Angie, I'm gonna let you take that conversation.
I mean, they're getting compared for very obvious reasons. First of all, they hit the festival circus, I think, within days of each other at the same festival. So, like, just right off the bat, you know, it was hard not to kind of put them side by side. And they're both movies about British geniuses who are kind of prickly, but, you know, are considered icons and whatnot. They're both getting a ton of Oscar buzz. It's hard not to, I don't know, at least to me, because of the similarities in subject matter and also because of the timing, it's been really hard to separate them. I think that if we're comparing the two, Imitation Game is much more entertaining and I think overall a better movie, although Theory of Everything is prettier and Eddie Redmayne's performance is more transformative. One of the things about The Imitation Game is Benedict Cumberbatch is getting so much Oscar buzz for it, and it's not that he's not good. I think he is good in it, but to me, it didn't feel like a performance that was that far above and beyond his usual, you know, like his usual.
Really? Level. I thought he was fantastic in it.
Wait, I have a question. Perry, have you seen Sherlock?
No. And, you know, the funny thing was they just released that picture today, and I was like, oh, this is here. I can write about it if I don't know anything about it. And they're like, no, you can't do that.
Well, I think he's very good in The Imitation Game, and I want to take nothing away from that, but I think the point Angie's making is, if you've seen Sherlock, the Alan Turing characterization is not wildly different. Alan Turing is definitely less sexy than Sherlock, but they are both geniuses who have a problem talking with people, and so there's a lot in common there, and there's a lot of kind of similar moves, though I think they're distinct. But I think as far as when you talk Oscar, I think people are going to look at it and go, like, well, this is just a variant on Sherlock. And so I feel like Cumberbatch is going to get out of the Oscar race on that.
I think he's going to sneak his way in. Whether like, we decide he deserves to be there or not, I think he's definitely in.
I think he'll be a nomination.
Nominated, yes.
Really, though, who else is there at this point? Not to bring the conversation away.
Eddie Redmayne, Michael Keaton.
Yeah, but, like, I think there's a pretty select group of, like, five or six individuals, and nobody is going to touch them at this point.
I don't think that there's any... I think that Cumberbatch will get a nomination. I'm just saying I don't think he deserves to win. I think he's good. I don't think he didn't, like, blow my mind with how great he was. But I like the movie overall. I think it's entertaining. I mean, Cumberbatch is, as you pointed out, very good at playing geniuses who are prickly and off-putting and yet weirdly compelling, and he does that again here. And it's
fun. They're not sexy in this one. It's actually a little upsetting because the part of the character is that he's gay, and, like, that's a big part of the movie, but he doesn't come off as a sexual character at all. And, you know, like, there's no...
If he comes off as sexual at all, it's when he's with the machine more than anything.
Absolutely.
Just, like, the way he approaches it and looks at it and touches it.
That's actually a very good point. Which is more sex than was in Theory of Everything, still, even though there were kids in that movie that were born of presumed sexual relations.
That's a good point. Why do we keep bringing this genius talk back to sex? What does that say about us? Anyway, moving on. No, I liked The Imitation Game a lot. I do take it. I think the performances are very good. I think Keira Knightley is really great in it. Matthew Good is very charming and very good in the role he's in. It
he
works
is
well.
Very nice to look at.
Yeah. Oh, also, Mark Strong is in this, and I liked him a great deal in it too, as an MI6 agent.
I liked Charles Dance a lot too, but then he kind of just disappears.
He does kind of disappear. Yeah. But it's funny because it's like there's actually a lot of humor laced into the film, and it's very kind of British dry humor type of thing. But what I didn't like about the movie is that I feel like it kind of, in its rush to tell the story, kind of rushes by some points that I was like, wait, but what does that work? Okay, we're not going to talk about that, that's fine. And
you mean like about like the science and the math of it all?
Yeah, there were things about it that I was like, wait.
Me too. There were times where I never thought that, I'm not really a science and math inclined person, but I was like, I actually wish there was a little bit more because it's one of those movies where they just keep telling you, like, this is a big breakthrough, it's really important, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just take your word for it.
I had the opposite kind of reaction. I was pretty satisfied with what I got this first time around, but it made me want to see it again so I could pick apart the details because I was very well aware of the fact that they were talking so fast and I was missing some things, but I feel like what I would have wanted was there, and you know, I know it is a condensed version of everything he goes through, and it most certainly cuts off abruptly at the end, but at the same time, I almost feel like this is the more entertaining version of the movie that we could have gotten. Like, I think that they did... It was just less than 2 hours? Is that what it was?
No, I think it was just... Yeah, you're right.
I feel like that's the length movie I needed this to be before I got exhausted with the ins and outs of Christopher and how all that worked.
Yeah. They just have an awkward ending because, and I'm not going to get into it in case you don't know what happened to Alan Turing, but it's hard to go out how his story went out and then also be like, but, you know, feel good and inspiration. And that's clearly the tone they try to force in the end credits.
Yeah. I want to talk about one thing I really liked about the movie, which is Keira Knightley's character, who is one of the rare women who worked... Actually, in the movie, she's the only woman who works with them. Chrissy has informed me that this is not the case in real life, which is a bummer. Yeah. But anyway, she is sort of... She's very different from Alan. Like, she's very charming in a way that he is... She's as charming and as good with people as he is bad with them, and they make such a good... I think they have fantastic chemistry. Not romantic or sexual, obviously, but they just really, to me, when I was watching it, they felt like they're friends. I think that she brings... Since Alan is such a hard character to like and to kind of to get to know, despite Cumberbatch's performance, not to take anything away from that, it's just the nature of the character. It was nice to have someone like Knightley who's much more engaging and warm and easier to connect to. I think, you know, because she serves as a buffer for Turing with his other coworkers, and I thought that she served kind of the same function with the audience.
I was surprised by how easily, though, I connected to Alan, because I think it has a lot to do with seeing him as a kid. Like, not that I related to what he was going through in any respect, but...
Perry's like, I am also a genius and a prick.
And I just didn't tell you any of that. I am really good at crossword puzzles, though. But only the Monday one in Newsday.
From what I'm told, that barely counts.
No, it really does. I'll fully admit it.
But I did like
the portions where they explored what he was going through as a kid.
Yeah, I think the movie is beautifully made. I think it's interesting in that it does tell audiences who this guy was, because a huge part of his contribution to the world was hidden, was top secret for 50-some years, and I think that's great. And I think it's genuinely entertaining, where The Theory of Everything was boring as shit to me. I would actually recommend people see The Imitation Game. I thought it was really fun. While I do have some issues with the fact that they were like, I know, we can sell the theme that like Keira Knightley's character and his character are more alike if they're both outsiders, so no other women. There's things in that like that bug me. But overall, I think it's a much better movie than Theory of Everything. And I think it's genuinely entertaining and also kind of informative. Kind of.
I will agree with that. I enjoyed this very much. And you can pick on certain things that might not be, you know, true to the actual story, but in the end they made a very well done, entertaining movie, and that's what I wanted.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. It's not like my favorite movie of the year, but I thought it was very entertaining. And it actually did make me want to learn more about Alan Turing, which I think is a good, you know, that's a good sign of any biopic, is when you walk away being like, that was really interesting and I'd like to know more.
That should have been one of the end credits. To learn more about Alan Turing, please go to
Wikipedia.com.
All right, I think we can move into our second review for the week, which...
Alrighty. So, now you made me self-conscious about saying it.
It's Babadook, like book, Babadook. Or look.
The Babadook.
Like it says here.
Like, when you see it in a book, I know. Or well, when you see it in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. It makes sense. I can't really read that.
I'm going to make sounds so that it'll cut to me.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. Babadook. All right, now that we're done with that part of this. So the Babadook is Jennifer Kent's feature directorial debut, and it's actually really exciting to finally get to see this movie and see that it's awesome. Dewey's stepping all over me. Because I was following this a little when they were raising money on Kickstarter for post-production, I think. So it was just really thrilling to see somebody raise money like that and then come out with a film that is so freaking fantastic. But what it is it's about this woman who is a single mother who lost her husband, and she's not really in the greatest place, and then she's got this little son who... on first look, is like the biggest, most annoying brat I've ever seen in my life that just screams and makes me really, really uncomfortable, but he's got issues that kind of justify his behavior quite a bit, and she reads to him all the time, and one night this mysterious book appears called Mr. Babadook, and they read it together, and I'm not going to spoil anything beyond that, but crazy shit starts to happen, and I freaking love this movie. This is definitely so far, I mean... I don't really think we have many horror movies left this year, so I have a feeling this will be my favorite of the year, but this is probably one of the best boogeyman-type stories I've seen in a really long time. And when you see the Babadook, like, I mean, really, though, I'm not, now I'm, like, going crazy about this, but when I see something like that, it's like, that's what makes me want to make horror movies, coming up with those really crazy-looking characters and all those crazy features on him and the way he talks, ugh, I
actually, and I don't often do this because I have a pretty good level of horror movie stamina. I actually covered my eyes during one of the points where he jumped out because they were teasing it so hard, and I was so upset that I full on buried my face in my sweater. I was just like, I'm gonna.
This is so mean, but that makes me so happy.
that's actually it's awesome. It's a sign of a good horror movie. I love this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year, I think, honestly. And one of the things that really struck me about it is it's a horror movie and a very effective, very creepy, very scary one, as Christy just said. But it was also, it's a really effective drama as well. It's a horror movie that, there were times in this movie when I wanted to cry, not because I was scared, but because it's a very, like, emotional, very, really very sad story.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it reminded me a little bit of Honeymoon, just in that it's another movie that would have actually worked as a drama without this other layer of horror on it, but the horror... you know, kind of enhances the drama of it all. I think...
And vice versa, the other way around, because, like,
Babadook
isn't some, like, crazy slasher that picks a family at random. What he's about is just so well intertwined with what's going on in the family, and that makes the ending especially thoughtful and, like, explosive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horror movie. It's like the really best horror movies. It's not just about, like, you know... boo! You know,
and
it's about...
What is interesting, and Perry touched on this a little bit, is that it's about a mother who isn't happy being a mother. Like, one of the first things you see is her son climb into bed with her, and he puts his hand around her neck, and it's like he just wants to be close to her, but you get that this is drowning this woman, and she just... like, she loves her son, but she also just wants some goddamn time to herself. And that gets spun out into a metaphor about sleep, because he keeps waking up in the night and being like, monsters, the Babadook, and she's like, oh my god, I need to sleep, and you are driving me crazy. And everything just gets worse and worse, because neither of them is sleeping, and everything is going crazy. And it's, like, scary, and it's emotionally, like, investing, and I was very, like, concerned and engaged and freaked out. And also...
they do an amazing job making you feel that same thing, too. It's like, when that kid screams, you can see her getting stressed, but it's like, you're not even getting stressed on her behalf. You're getting stressed yourself. Like,
sound design's really great.
Yeah. Really uncomfortable and genuinely made me think, like, dear God, like, what happens if I have a child and if he's like that? What will I do?
Like, I'm definitely adding this to those movies that makes me fear ever having a baby. Like, this movie, this should be my pull quote for this movie. This movie made my ovaries want to shrivel and die. Because it is upsetting, guys. But no, I agree. And what I thought was especially impressive, and I don't want to get into so much why this happens, but I loathed that little kid for the first, I don't know, half hour of the movie. And then things start turning, and I empathized with him, and I was like, what is happening? Because this is that same little monster child whose screams in that car scene made me want to run.
That kid is so good in this movie.
This is his first movie.
Noah Wiseman.
There are so many horror movies with kids in them, and they're usually kind of like doing like the innocent, creepy, cute thing where they're like, Mommy, I see a dead girl floating around or whatever. And it's, you know, they're supposed to be like precocious and cute and whatnot. This kid isn't those things. This kid is very unsettling, but in a way that feels like a like maybe how a real child would be unsettling, a real child that was dealing with these problems. He's not precocious. It's a very raw performance from the kid. I was very impressed.
And speaking
not
of,
to take anything away from the actress, the lead actress, who is also just incredible.
Essie Davis is outstanding. And like a lot of people are actually saying, which I feel like it won't happen because this is such a small movie and it'd be really hard for it to get the attention it needs for this to happen. But a lot of people have been saying like she should be up for a Best Actress Oscar. Like
I would love it if she was. I don't necessarily think she will be just for, you know, lots of political and business reasons. But I think
I would absolutely lose my mind if that happened.
It would be amazing. The thing is that I feel like if you haven't seen this movie and you don't, maybe you don't even know what we're talking about. Maybe you haven't seen the trailer. But she manages to do so much more than give a good horror movie performance. She gives a really powerful, interesting psychological performance that I feel like this movie is gonna be iconic immediately. Like
oh yeah,
it's
a classic. I think that this is. It's honestly one of the best horror movies I've seen in years. Granted, I don't follow the genre as well as closely as Perry does, but still.
It's also got a great rewatchable quality to it. It's like after one time, you're going to want to go see it again, but then you're going to want to see it again after that because there's so many layers to it and there's so much to think about that you need to see it more than once.
Agreed. And also, isn't it on VOD? Is that what's coming on?
What?
Isn't it coming out on VOD?
I really hope so, because I would like to watch it again and again. I was hoping it would come in an award screener pack at some point.
Not yet.
I mean, I don't know if... I guess IFC Midnight does that, but I've never gotten anything from them, sadly. But I want this one. I would do anything for this to win some sort of award or get
Hashtag
some sort of recognition.
Film blogger problems.
Seriously. But this will also be iconic, I think, because of the Babadook itself. I mean, see, like, just look at the... Is that a card you have behind you? Like, just look at the design. Look at the little symbol, the icon. Even that is just brilliant.
Yeah,
if you can go and paste that anywhere, and there's nothing to it at all. It's like a black blob, but there's something so creepy about it at the same time. And it's even
really
creepier
smart.
When you see the movie.
It's even creepier
it really
because the way that the design, the Babadook, and like the movements are really just like, oh, it's just like so unsettling.
And then
really
voice. Christy, can you do the voice?
Let me see.
Babadook. Pretty good. Okay.
All right. It was like a whispering Babadook.
Well, that's when he does it, remember? Because I don't want to get into it. But I do want to say that the sound design of this movie is so upsetting that, like, if you live in a building where there are creaks in your apartment, prepare to be freaked out for the next week and a half.
The sound design in this movie is, it's one of the times when you actually notice really good sound design. That's how good it is. Because usually I feel like it's not something that we comment on very much, but it goes such a long way toward what you guys were saying about like feeling upset on your own behalf and not just because you're like, well, I feel sorry for this woman. Like you feel like you're there experiencing it with them.
Yeah.
And the Babadook is also really creepy and has so much weight behind him because when you kind of see what he represents and you know, without getting too spoilery. It's the kind of thing that really keeps you up at night and is just really, like, horrifying.
It's also worth noting that the set design is brilliant. Like, while we were talking, I had the IMDb page open and I'm, like, flipping through some of the stills and, like, I'm just looking at that one of the two of them sitting across from each other at the kitchen table. It's almost got, like, a fairy tale quality to it.
Yeah, the
and
whole
I
coloring.
Loved that about this movie.
I actually said that in my review for CinemaBlend that the coloring palette, it looks like a dark fairy tale. It's, like, very cool and kind of eerie and... It's a beautiful movie. Like, one, it's shocking that this is Jennifer Kent's first movie, because it's not just a good horror movie. This is an amazing movie, period, full stop.
And not, like, amazing for a first-time director. Like you said, full stop, just amazing.
This is someone who really knew what they wanted to achieve before going into it.
I can't wait to see what she does next.
I didn't mean that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jennifer Kent. Oh, I'm excited about her. She's amazing. And this is Australian. We didn't mention that, but it's Australian.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Which is the reason the name Babadook has become such a... Because we've been saying Babadook, but then you see the movie and you're like, oh, well, the rhymes don't work if you say Babadook. And some people said, oh, is it like an Australian fairy tale? And as far as I know, they made up this story completely. Like,
I think it had some true root in something. Like, they're not the Babadook itself, but, like, there was a concept that it came from. It's in the Kickstarter campaign video,
okay.
I believe. I have to go. I should really go rewatch that. It's
I didn't know it was
interesting
Kickstarter.
Rewatching that after the fact.
It makes me so mad that this and like that Zach Braff movie were both Kickstarters this year. Guys, this is how you do a Kickstarter. This movie is outstanding. Oh, I would have been so proud to be like, yeah, I kicked into the Babadook.
You would have had bragging rights forever.
I wish I had now.
Well, now that we should mention, if you're interested in this, they're actually making books like Mr. Babadook from the movie, but they have to hit a certain pre-sale number. I think they're going to hit the pre-sale. Last I heard, they were halfway to what they need to make the order, and the movie hasn't even come out in the U.S. yet.
I didn't know about this, but I am going to look this up immediately. So, in sum, Babadook, all the thumbs up?
Yeah, I think Babadook you should absolutely see. I think it's flat out one of the best movies of the year.
Absolutely, I agree. 100%.
I'm with that, too.
So now we're going to talk about a movie. Yeah, we're going to talk about a movie that is not one of the best movies of the year. Honestly, I don't think this movie would be that sad to hear me say that. We're going to talk about Horrible Bosses 2, which, as the title suggests, is a sequel to Horrible Bosses. So once again, it stars Jason Bateman, Jason Sudeikis, and Charlie Day as these three idiot best friends who in the last film were trying to kill their bosses. But in this one, they're their own bosses. They've started their own company called The Shower Buddy, which is kind of like... It doesn't really matter, but it's like a car wash, but for people, basically.
I just put together that they're the horrible bosses in this one. I just got that.
I think I might have gotten that from the trailer.
Yeah, I think that might have been the log line.
It's okay.
Christy was too busy fixating on the correct way to say Babadook, which honestly, frankly, is probably more important anyway.
That's where all my research went this week.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're their own bosses. They are actually horrible bosses for themselves because they are not good at running their own business, but they do catch kind of a big break when a businessman from a big company, played by Christoph Waltz, expresses interest in buying some of their products. So, you know, that's very exciting for them. But it doesn't really go that well. So then they hatch a plan to kidnap that guy, Christoph Waltz's son, played by Chris Pine, and hold him for ransom.
We love Chris Pine.
We do love Chris Pine.
Honestly, I have to say, Chris Pine is someone that I haven't really had strong feelings about, but he is really good in this. So just like with the first one, so much of what makes this movie work is how much the three leads, Bateman, Sudeikis, and Day, like just how great their chemistry is, and they're just so hilarious together. And then Chris Pine comes in. He's in this movie a lot more than I expected, and I was surprised to find that he also has a really good comic chemistry with them. I honestly didn't see that coming.
It's actually really funny because, like, yeah, I thought he was going to have a small part in it because of the trailers, but he becomes an integral part of this comedy trio, now a quartet for a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because, like, okay, the three lead guys, they're attractive enough for, like, comics. We were discussing this where there's different levels of, like, what you consider attractive, and they're fine. But, like, then you put Chris Pine next to them, and he seems like he's from a different movie, but he performs beautifully in this. And what's also funny is the guys keep recognizing that it's just not fair that he's this good-looking. Like, one of my favorite jokes is he's crying, and they say to him, "Your eyes are so blue when you cry."
It's kind of funny really that we're going to get two movies in 2 months that kind of poke fun at how perfect-looking he is.
Honestly, I'm really excited by this turn that Chris Pine's career has taken, because at the beginning of the year, I saw him in Jack Ryan, which is such a bad movie, and it's not his fault that it's a bad movie, but it did nothing to convince me that he was a person I should be paying money to see in a theater.
I forgot that was this year.
Yeah, sadly it was.
Isn't that crazy? That and I, Frankenstein were this year. That blows my mind.
Guys, I'm ready for this year to be over.
But yeah, he's so good in this. Christoph Waltz is in it less than you would think. Chris Pine is really the new addition.
That's
like
my main complaint. I like the movie a lot. I actually think it's funnier than the first one. Because the first one, I was like, yeah, it's kind of funny, but I didn't understand what everyone's freaking out about. This one I find way funnier because I laughed through most of it, but I wanted more Christoph Waltz. And secondarily, I don't get the Jennifer Aniston stuff. That just doesn't play for me. I don't know.
The Jennifer Aniston plotline was, frankly, it was offensive in the first one because it's essentially about her raping or trying to rape Charlie Day's character, and it's played for laughs. It's like, it's so hilarious that Jennifer Aniston is raping Charlie Day because guys who look like Charlie Day don't get raped by women who look like Jennifer Aniston. Ah, it's, which is really fucked up, and they kind of continue that thread in this movie, and so I don't really care for it, but I think, I don't know, it. I don't think it's worse than the first one, which is what I was expecting, honestly, when they announced the sequel. I don't think it's worse. I think it might be better, and I think as in both movies, it's just it, how much you'll enjoy it just depends on how much you enjoy spending time with these three characters.
Yeah, mileage will vary.
Does Jason Sudeikis' character get dumber since the last one?
Definitely.
Okay, so it's not just
like,
me.
It's like he and Charlie Day's character is pretty slow in the last one, but he and Charlie Day, like, now they seem like they're from It's Always Sunny, where they say stuff and you're just like, how do you function as a human being? Like, but I do think that the movie's actually very funny. I think the plot is ambitious, but here's the thing. They try so hard to be like, this is how this is going to work, and they set up this whole, like, scenario where they, like, show you the ideal situation, so you know that ideal situation's not going to play out because they wouldn't dare show it to you twice. But because they showed you how things are supposed to work, when things actually start falling apart and they start making these leaps in logic, you're like, no, wait a second, but that doesn't make sense because you never showed this part of the plot and blah, blah, blah. So, like, in the third act, there's a ton of plot holes, which I would just say, just click your brain off and don't deal with those. Just enjoy the Django Unchained reunion that is Motherfucker Jones, Jamie Foxx with Christoph Waltz.
No, don't sell it as a Django Unchained reunion. They don't hang out in the movie. They actually are never in a scene together.
But it's like, there was one point where he's on screen. Also, was him chewing on red straws, like, a thing in the last one? Because that's all he does in this movie. He always is, like, drinking a drink with a red straw, or at one point, eating red straws like candies, which is, like, such a bizarre...
I don't know. I guess you're just picking up on way more subtle acting choices than I have been.
It's not like a nod to Brad Pitt to me, where it was like, I'm gonna chew on something this entire...
Yeah, I mean, so Jamie Foxx is in this, Jennifer Aniston's in this, they bring back Kevin Spacey, Yeah, it's, if you like the first one, there's a lot of callbacks. But actually, I did appreciate that it wasn't just a comedy sequel that was like, we're going to do the exact same thing this time because, you know, as the Hangover, that happens all the time.
I'm surprised you guys are so positive about this. I think the first time that came across my radar was basically that there was just no point to making a sequel to this movie.
Yeah, we both went into it being like, so we're here.
Yeah.
Not dreading it, but like neither one of us was especially expecting it to be very good.
While you guys went into it, I was thinking, I'm so much happier sitting in the Hunger Games right now.
Yeah, I got emails from some people that I won't name that were like, good luck with that one. Ha ha. But like it was actually very funny. I for me it's kinda like Sex Tape where I don't understand why people are being so shitty about it. Like I thought it was really funny. It's funnier than Sex Tape. Yeah.
People were kinda shitty about the first one, no?
I think it did well,
but I don't think it was well reviewed.
I think it got better reviews than this one. You can look it up and tell us if that's true or not. I think the Rotten Tomatoes score was a lot higher for the last one.
Marvel Bosses 2 is currently at a 26.
Yeah.
That's pretty freaking low. Yeah, never mind, 69%.
Shit, I don't get that at all. I find this one way funnier than the first one. Yeah, there's some things that don't work for me. The Aniston stuff I can take or leave any day, whatever. But like,
and it's still not like it's like a great movie or like something like brilliant. But if you just want to watch four guys kind of egg each other on and be funny together, this movie's perfect for that.
Yeah, like, I don't even know if there's any other R-rated comedies out right now. So, like, it's not like, you know, like, if you want something raunchy and silly, then go to this. It's fun.
We haven't had one in a while. I feel like summer season is the time for raunchy comedies.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't remember. I know
we have The Interview coming out, but that's not
for that's true.
Weeks.
Yeah,
Christmas Day.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, see Horrible Bosses for Chris Pine alone. Chris Pine is so funny that you'll be glad you saw this movie.
You will be won over by Chris Pine, even if, like me, your previous impression of him is, oh, God, it's the guy from Jack Ryan again.
So when are we starting the official Chris Pine fan club? Because, like, I feel like we should be the heads of that.
This is the first meeting of the official Chris Pine fan club.
I mean, so you guys have heard me rant about this thing a lot, and I'm gonna talk about my ranking of the Chrises. So...
Andrew does talk about this more than I think anyone listening would believe.
I'm so sorry. I talk about this so much. So there's, you know, obviously Chris Pratt, Chris Pine, Chris Evans, and Chris Hemsworth. And for so long, Chris Pine, I would always rank them in my head. It was like it's a weird obsession I have.
And to people sitting around her.
I would talk about this. It would be one of those topics. You know, everyone has those few topics that for some reason they just can't let go of, and this was one of mine. And Chris Pine has always come in dead last. But after seeing this, I think he's, like, slowly starting inches way up. So Hemsworth is in trouble. I don't care if he's the sexiest man alive. That guy's in trouble.
You need to get an interview with Chris Pine and explain this to him and record it on video just so I can see his reaction.
No.
I dare you.
I see Chris Pine. You were by far my least favorite Chris for a while. You're really knocking it out of the park. Congratulations.
Chris Pine, you are way less horrible than I expected. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
I like that in my Angie Hahn impression, I'm for some reason like a weird middle-aged man.
I mean, I am kind of spiritually a weird middle-aged man, so I totally
I thought you were
it.
Kevin from Home Alone.
Okay, if you guys are listening and you haven't seen what she's talking about, go to our Twitter account and
I'm
look at it.
I'm just picturing it in my head right now.
I'll just pop it in because I said I the other morning I woke up at 3 a.m. for no reason I can figure out, and I couldn't go back to sleep, so I made a everyone said it's horrifying. I find it charming. I imagined what Home Alone
it's
would look
horrifying.
Like.
It's a little weird how perfect Angie's face is like fitting in that though.
I think that's the weirdest thing, is that, like, because I recognize the... So she used the top half of my face and the bottom half of it.
Can we see this at all?
Yeah! Oh, my God! I
want to
see it!
Oh, my God!
It freaks me out!
Yeah. I used a photo where your whole face isn't in frame. So it's not, like, from here up, it's Macaulay Culkin, the ears are Macaulay Culkin, and the very bottom of the chin is Macaulay Culkin. But all this good stuff, that's all 100% Han.
Oh, God, do you know how unsettling
I've ever seen? The, like, weirdest, most beautiful thing.
You know how unsettling it is to look at a photo that you recognize as being of yourself, but also not? Like, it's just strange. I want to get good at Photoshop so I can do this to you someday.
Game on.
All right, okay, so yeah,
very far off
bosses. Do we recommend it?
Yeah,
well, do you guys recommend
it? I mean, looking for some dumb jokes this holiday season, Horrible Bosses is fun.
If you hated the first one and you were just like, I don't see any value in that, then you're not gonna like this one. But if you saw the other one and you were like, that was kind of fun, I liked it, then you're gonna feel the same way about this one.
Yeah, it's better than we expected.
And you're gonna All have right. to reorder your Chris ranking.
Yeah, everybody reevaluate your Chris's, your Chris list. Mm. So we
did pretty well this week.
Yeah.
Three for three.
If you had to say, of these three movies, if you had to tell someone which one to watch, what would you say?
Babadook.
Are you kidding? Why is that even a question?
Yeah,
obviously, the Babadook. We called one of them, about Horrible Bosses 2, we're saying, that's pretty good. About Imitation Game, we're saying, well, it's better than Theory of Everything. And Babadook, we're like, it's the greatest movie of the year. And
yeah,
you're
pretty
like,
much.
Which one?
So go see the Babadook.
All right. That is a wrap on this episode. But
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, that too. And, you know, if you're bored with your family at home, why don't you just search us on the web all over the place? You know, go to iTunes and rate us and like us and comment. Go comment on the YouTube page. You can visit our website, popcornprosecco.com. You can interact with all of us on Twitter through our Twitter handle, popcornprosecco, or you could get us all individually. Angie, do you want to start with your Twitter and stuff first?
No, I don't.
What do I do now?
I will start with my Twitter and stuff. Actually, I want to start with Angie's.
She's so pissed about Home Alone.
I'm not being
photo.
I'm horrified. I'm terrified. I'm unsettled. I'm not angry. All right, fine. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Do I dare ask Christy if she wants to go next?
I'm fine. I'm good. I'm quite happy with the Home Alone picture.
Clearly.
I emailed it. I waited. I finished it at like 4:45 in the morning, but then I was like, I'll wait to send it to
you. You know
the
what's funny is I woke up in the morning and I didn't see the email you sent, but I saw the one Angie sent saying that she was so, like, she's glad she was sleeping because she would have had nightmares, and I got all excited. I'm like, what did I miss? I want nightmares. And then all of a sudden I went on Twitter and my world changed.
Yeah. People had a big reaction. People had a big reaction to Angie Hahn and Home Alone remake.
Did we ever say what Christy's Twitter was?
No, I'm sorry. I'm at Christy Kutchko on the Twitters. And you can check out my writing highlights from all over the interwebs at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can get me at PNemiroff on Twitter, and my writing is also on Collider. So that is the end of this episode. Have a very happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week.